Listen and stream the all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5 for the only talk that matter.
Welcome back. As I said to you all last week, we had a discussion on the suitcase drug trade and some of the pros and cons. Well, not necessarily the pros, but definitely the cons. And we welcome back to our program. Let's say good morning to Alison Pouchet. Good morning to you.
Hello, good morning. Thanks for having us again.
And let's say good morning to Junior Walcott as well. Good morning to you and welcome back to our program.
Good morning, Satish. Good morning to your listeners.
It's nice to have you all with us here this morning. For those who may have missed our program last week, I'll give you all the opportunity once again to familiarize our listeners with you all, telling us a bit about who you are and some of the things that you're involved in. Let's start with Ms. Pouchet. You go right ahead.
Okay, so I'm a registered pharmacist and I'm actively in duty. I am also the president of the Pharmaceutical Society of Trinidad and Tobago. And I was also the head of the NIPDEC procurement agency for the government, pharmaceuticals and non-pharmaceuticals. I was the manager at the Tobago Regional Health Authority. And basically, I have a master's in health admin as well.
Ms. Walcott, tell us a bit about yourself.
Okay, I've worked in the public sector all my life. I retired as principal pharmacist. I am currently the secretary of the Pharmaceutical Society. I am the Americas region representative to the Commonwealth Pharmacists Association. I have been on CAP, which is the Caribbean Association of Pharmacists. And I think that covers it.
We had a pretty interesting discussion last time you were both here, and there were some questions that our listeners had sent in back then. I can't remember if we had ever gotten to some of those or not, but to those of you listening in to us, if you have questions this morning, feel free to send your questions to 3061065 or be a part of the discussion on 627-3223 and 625-2257. Just to refresh the discussion in the minds of our listeners, we were talking about the suitcase trade, the suitcase drug trade, and what that means. I'd like one of you to just quickly go over what that is and how it impacts on persons purchasing such drugs and so on.
Okay, so to just recap again, this practice of suitcase trading impacts negatively on persons, the public, the citizens' health, their economic situation, the socioeconomic situation. It also impacts on the trade of pharmaceuticals negatively, economically, for those distributors who are in the trade credibly. And also, of course, we saw that there could be resistance to antibiotics and other categories of drugs because of the nature of the counterfeit product, as we saw. We also saw that fake drugs, as we define them, can also be substandard produced drugs, those that are not keeping up to the standard, even though they are registered, and also those that are not registered in your country and have entered. So in general, what we will say is a falsified submission of a drug or presentation of a drug in your country is a misrepresentation of its content. The intention is to misrepresent the content, the source of where it is coming as well. So these are all the three categories that you can categorize fake drugs under.
Since we spoke last to today, if I'm not mistaken, there was one incident in which the Ministry of Health had to issue a release. And I think it was for eye drops, if I'm not mistaken. Can you give us some more information on that?
Well, I'm not I'm too intimate with it, but I know that it was a discussion about the eye drop. And of course, the ministry did the proper thing, which was to give the public their notice, right? The drug was, again, as I said, the drug could be registered and coming into the country legally, and that is what we call post-market surveillance. As we were speaking last week about placebo and randomized trials, clinical trials. Even though a drug comes on and it is registered, we need to keep monitoring post-market, which is after it has come onto the market, so that we will get adverse events being reported by the end users and the consumers. So basically, this is a situation like that could have happened where it, you know, the drug was substandard and did not keep up to the standard of the manufacturing criteria.
You know,
so these things can happen as well.
Ms. Walker, if you'd like to add anything to this, feel free to jump in.
The thing is that sometimes the Ministry of Health puts recalls out. It doesn't necessarily mean that the drug is in the country, but because we are we belong to the World Health Organization and we have links, if there is a problem with a drug somewhere else, knowing that we do have this suitcase trade, you take the precaution of letting the public know that this particular product, if the product is really registered and something is wrong with a particular batch, the batch number will be stressed that, okay, product A, which is legal, there is a problem with this particular batch, and as such, this batch is recalled. And the client is then advised to take the product back to where they bought it. Now, of course, if it is a recall from a legitimate product, you will be recompensed. But when you buy things from the suitcase and something is wrong with it, I'm not too sure that you as the client have any right to recall, any compensation if anything goes wrong.
Let's see if you have someone in the line. Hello, good morning.
Pleasant good morning, Satish. I have one question for your guest. I heard about the suitcase trade and drugs being substandard and so on, right? Are the same drugs not being sold in pharmacies? That's the first question. And what if it is that the same drug is sold in both pharmacy and the suitcase trader, where it is much lower cost than the pharmacy? How do we view that? And finally, I recall some years ago when many of us used to travel to Caracas and Margarita and so on, where we bought pharmaceuticals and bring here in the suitcase trade. That was accepted in Venezuela. And some of us sold it here to people we know and so on. How do you view that, and how do you differentiate? Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much for your call.
Okay, so again, as I specified, the categorization of one of the fake drug categories is that it is coming in from a source that is not recognized as our registered product. We also spoke last week about the small suitcase, which is a family going to buy something, as he described, and they can bring in something for themselves because they have chosen to buy it in another jurisdiction for their family, and they bring it back in small quantities, not for trade. So they have taken that responsibility on themselves to take that drug in, right? Basically, that happens. We know that happens, and it happens sometimes on a larger scale, as we said. Some professionals and some pharmacies or trade places will bring in a larger amount. So, it has different degrees of importation and the quantum that you bring in. So basically, it's being used in another jurisdiction, but the source is not recognized here. Cannot be used for trade by a large-scale distributor because they would have had to get authorization from the manufacturer. They would have also had to have food and drug approval for that particular source, and all of the regulatory requirements would have been met. So Ms. Walker could probably add to your information here.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, okay. So the gentleman asked basically three questions. I will tackle the last question first. If you go abroad and you choose to buy something and you bring it, you're buying that for yourself. So there is no liability. You would have gone in, you would have bought it, you would have said fine. Your liability begins when you decide to sell this to somebody, because you are now putting yourself in a position where if you bought it and you take it and anything happens to you, well, that's your problem. But if you buy it and something happens and you decide to sell it and something happens to the person to whom you sold it, then you are liable. And you know, so that while it's fairly all right, you go abroad, you buy clothes, you buy whatever, and you come home with it, anything, you say, oh gosh, I spend my money bad. But it you need to think about if you sell this to somebody and something goes wrong. All right. Now, in terms of the suitcase trader bringing in the same drug as the manufacturer, it's the same liability on a larger scale. When you buy a drug, a registered product in a pharmacy, and God forbid something goes wrong, because of the paperwork and the system in place, you have claims. The country, the ministry can make claims on the manufacturer if you use that product and something goes wrong. When the suitcase trader brings this in and this is sold, whether he sells it to somebody or it gets into the legitimate trade, and anything goes wrong, who is going to be liable for this? Because most times, suitcase traders who sell things, I know some of my colleagues or pharmacy owners, you don't even get a receipt showing that a transaction has taken place. So yes, nothing may happen. The thing might be all right and everything is okay and you get something cheaper and whatever, but you always have to look at what if something goes wrong.
Let's take another call. Hello, good morning.
Good morning, Satish. Rima. And it's yes. Now, Satish, you know I work in the system in the airport, right? And the suitcase trade with respect to drugs, you know, coming in without certain permissions or whatnot is real. And the customs have a challenge, right? Because remember, the customs is not a competent authority to deal with this, it's the food and drugs. But what happens, being the first interceptors of these suitcase traders with items of drugs and whatnot, all we do, we detain and refer it to food and drugs, right? We will detain the item. But listen to me, you'll hardly find these people declaring it on the form, the custom forms, right? And probably if they go through the red line, you may pick it up. But with the green line, you is not physically really think to check 100% in the green line, because you know what the green line is. And most of these people try, get through the green line, sorry to say. And then they will say the custom pass there and pass and whatnot, but it's difficult. But the thing is that in the airport itself, I think they should have a food and drug personnel there to handle it instead of having it be food. Because I'll tell you something, sometimes you refer it to food and drug and you know the people end up, the importers in the suitcase trade, they end up getting back the goods, I don't know, somehow, right? Because they will speak of it openly. So I can tell you, it is real, it is a challenge. And as long as you have a green line, you'll have a lot of these drugs coming in without the necessary papers and whatnot. They may catch intercept one or two on the red line where you do physical searches at the bag or whatever it is. So I think more emphasis should be paid to personnel of the food and drug division in the airport itself to intercept these goods. I thank you very much.
Thank you so much for your call. The caller is highlighting something that I wanted to raise, the ease with which these unauthorized drugs, for want of a different term, I don't want to use the term illegal, but these unauthorized drugs come into the country with such ease. Can we ever really be able to stop them from coming in, or can we use a different approach? And somebody has sent a message here that might be an approach that we can look at. And it says, tell us, how do you stop legitimate pharmacies selling drugs brought in via suitcase due to supply chain issues? And the person went on to say, how do you stop antibiotics being given without prescription by pharmacies? And I guess the point he or she is trying to raise is, do we have enough monitoring mechanisms or consequences for persons who actively engage in promoting the suitcase trade, penalties for them? Do we have that? Do we need more? What's the situation?
Spector, All right. I have been in both situations. I have been called to the airport to check the validity of what persons would have brought in. Now, generally, if the person, it depends on quantity. If you've carried your family abroad or you're coming back from a trip and you have about 5 or 6 bottles of vitamins, nobody bothers with that, okay? Because, you know, well, you went into Walmart or wherever and they had a sale and you bought these vitamins. And persons bringing that in, they may sell 1 or 2, but generally that is for family use. So you allow that. The difficulty comes in when you have 2 or 3 suitcases, which you open and you find it all filled with drugs. Now, one of the problems is in Trinidad is that if we have drugs, products are registered as drugs. Other products are looked at as food supplements. The area of food supplements is a little bit iffy, all right? So we may look at it and say, well, they're bringing some drugs, but that might be classified as a food supplement. The herbal issue, that the herbal products are another issue because they're not really classified depending on what it is. If you look at the labeling, it's really a herb and they're not making any claims. And for it to be a drug, you have to claim that it will do something. So that might be one of the issues, the little, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wanted to add, though, that there are strong and robust laws which govern the food and drugs. For example, what food and drugs enter this country, and we have third schedule drugs, we have controlled drugs falling under that act. We also have the Antibiotic Act, and they also control the movement of and sale, distribution, procurement of antibiotics and registration of antibiotics in this country. And they are very robust, and that is where you have inspections going on with from the Drug Inspectorate. Also for narcotics, it falls under the Narcotics Act, the Dangerous Drug Regulations govern that also. And then you have the Pharmacy Board Act with the OTC drugs that are allowed to be sold in pharmacies as well as in the rural shopkeepers, right? What the schedules are there in the act. So we have pieces of legislation that govern that. So basically, how do you govern ethics? Now, the governing and the inspection of pharmacies for OTC and for the practice of pharmacy, that they are the pharmacist there, and it is that someone is being manned that has a high ethical conscience and qualified training as a pharmacist. That lies in the purview of the Pharmacy Board, whereas with the antibiotic and the narcotics and the control, that lies with the Ministry of Health regulatory bodies of the Drug Inspectorate and the Food and Drug Inspectors, and they will pay their visits and they will find their books in order. What the person before was talking about is under the counter antibiotics. We have to insist that laws cannot be written for ethics. And this is where the Pharmaceutical Society will appeal to our fraternity as to having high standards of practice and ethics, because we are held out in the public to do no harm. And that is one of our oath, part of our oath. And so we have to appeal to the consciences and the ethics of the practice of the profession on by doing workshops. And that is what we do from our part of our, which is not legislative. We are the non-profit organization based on our vision is to have the standards of practice high quality and also ethical. So that's the most that we do to prevent that. And we have to say to our colleagues and our pharmacies and pharmacy owners that they have a responsibility to the public, as I said, to safeguard their health, to safeguard their socioeconomic standing, by making proper choices and to desist from doing these practices.
I want to add to that because the burden of selling antibiotics that way really comes from pressure from the client. Clients get into their heads that drug A is what they need to cure themselves because Google is the latest doctor. So you go to the pharmacy and you say, I want to get some antibiotics. I have this, I have that, I have the other. And the insistence that they get this is what leads to the under-the-counter thing. Because if you really look at it, if a drug is controlled and you require a prescription and somebody is selling you this without a prescription, of course it's unethical, but then you have to ask yourself, where is he getting this from to sell to me? And that persons need to take a pause, think about the answer to that, and then make a conscious decision either to accept the therapeutic alternative that the pharmacist might suggest or go to the doctor. You know, simple.
You know, sometimes it may seem that simple, but it doesn't work out that way. And for whatever reason, maybe some people, they're looking at the cost or whatever factors into people making their decisions. But what worries me is the ease with which these things that are not regulated can come into the country. And I'll tell you why. Just over the weekend, I was at a parlor. Let me just describe it as a parlor. And there was a transaction going on with two gentlemen operating out of a station wagon. And they were selling cigarettes to this establishment. And I was, when you see cigarette, you expect some big cigarette van from West Indian Tobacco. Somebody to be around with a salesman and a sales book and all that kind of thing. None of that was there.
So because cigarettes, just like drugs, because of the tax on it, that is a roaring trade. Just as how you have uncustomed alcohol. I'm sure you would have heard the stories of people buying alcohol and it cheaper.
Yeah.
Of course, sometimes you get milk, and when you get the bottle, it's just tea in the bottle.
Mm-hmm.
But Trinidadians, well, I wouldn't say Trinidadians. People always think means to get a deal. And if it seems too good to be, it probably isn't, eh?
Mm-hmm. Well, I couldn't help but say to myself, well, look how easy this thing taking place. And taking place in full view. Nobody hiding and doing this thing. Even though it's illegal and all of that, they're doing it in broad daylight in front of everybody. Bold face, as we say.
Everybody has a profession and they have a way of specifying and making their techniques more efficient. But as I said last week, this trade is a big trade and it is following the pathway of the illicit drug trade. And they are using all the technologies, including the darknet and the internet, to get to persons. So it is only what we can do is to tighten up on our robust systems and by appealing to the ethics of pharmacists and tightening up on the inspections of pharmacies and so. But with regard to those that fall out of the purview of inspection, like shops and parlors that sell also a lot of pharmaceuticals, fake, maybe most of them might be fake, I'm not saying, so I can't do, I have not, it's not empirical, it's anecdotal, but, you know, basically, if you continue to ask, the pharmacists continue to ask, distributors need to be giving you the paper. We will not send you on the legal site to look to see if a drug is registered, but when you are buying something, you could at least every now and again ask, if it is not a recognized distributor, ask them for their marketing authorization and their registration for that document, for that drug. Why would you want to keep something that you know could cause harm if you don't get the documents that show that it is credible? So that is one of the main ways that we as a fraternity could ward off this problem. We cannot sell ourselves that, oh my God, my trade is, I need some money, I need to get more sales. We cannot sell that because we have to put that utmost in our mind that we are trusted by the public and we have to take care of their health.
Let's take another call.
And the public needs to, years ago there was a slogan about taking charge of your health. And I think it was a WHO slogan that persons need to take charge of their health. And one of the ways you do that is by checking, just as how you scan, a housewife goes into the grocery or the market and you look at the vegetables or whatever on sale and you eye them with a critical eye and you make judgments. You do the same thing when it comes to drugs. If you feel you need an antibiotic, you need to go to the doctor to get one. And most times people look at the antibiotic and they want to take it for viral infections. and this is a bacterial, not viral. So you really don't know. You go up on the net, you see things, and then you come in and you say, well, I want to get this because I went on the net and whatever. And, you know, you don't do that because you really don't know. You need to go in. Yes, of course, you need to read. You need to educate yourself on what your situation may be. Notice I say maybe. And you go in and you ask a question and you take the advice. Oh. You don't go in asking for something.
Well, I'll tell you.
You know it's controlled.
What you are suggesting is probably the way it should happen. But that's not
of
the
course.
Way. That's not the way it is no. happening because... As you rightly did say, we have a set of self-professed professors in medicine and think, no, you know, COVID-19 brought them out of the woodwork. Everybody's an expert and everybody could self-diagnose and know what is best for them and all that kind of thing, which is scary. Because at the end of the day, when you see they get yourself in trouble, it's the very same people who they entrust all the time they go into to try and save them. That's exactly what happens. I think you have another call. Hello, good morning.
Hello.
Yes, good morning.
Am I online?
You are live on it. Go ahead.
Okay, good. I was saying to you before, Satish, that the drug name was Warfarin. Now, it is said in the news report that Patrick Manning bought this drug and he was taking it. But even while he took it, he had this massive medical episode. When they decided to look, get the drug from the manufacturer, everything in relation to his relation to the drug changed. Now, I don't know if it is that it was a fake drug that he bought and he was taking, oblivious of the fact. But the point I wanted to make to you is simply this. If it is that he could have found himself in a situation like this, what happens to the small man? And listen to your comment.
Well, to glean from what he was saying, former Prime Minister Patrick Manning seemed to have bought himself some fake drugs. And he was taking it and he was feeling good. And when he got the good drugs, something went wrong. I don't know.
It was the other way around.
Or the other way around. Or something like that.
He was taking the drug, but he wasn't getting the desired therapeutic effect. And when they decided to switch, quote unquote, brands, he then got the desired effect. They then realized that, well, the first one really wasn't working. Now, that's another issue, eh? That has to do with therapeutic interchanges and bioavailability. That's a different issue. I don't know. It was never brought forward which quote unquote brandy was taking, and which one worked and which one didn't work. That was not said in the public domain.
Mm.
All right.
Yes.
They knew there was a problem, but they never said which.
Let's take another call. Hello. Nobody there. Hello, good morning.
Good morning, Patish. Garbage time I'm here. Good morning to you guys. I'm very happy to hear you all this morning. Now, I just want to find out something. When you change brand, especially insulin, does it have a boost effect? Because I've been using acetyl insulin 70-55% amount of time. And it suddenly changed the insulin, and I'm having problems with it. Considering the eye medicine around the same time that they had a problem with the eye medicine and the expiry date, I would like to know if you all can give me the name of the eye medicine, because I have saved all those vials, and I have lost one of the eye also. During the course of that time, I was taking treatment, and apparently I don't know the name of the medicine that was given a problem that was not good. I was going to a private motor. I put me on that private hospital because they couldn't do certain things, and that is around the COVID time. So I want to know if there is any way I can get information concerning that. Thank you. I'll be locked on.
Thank you very much for that question, because I pulled up the media release and the name of the eye drop that was recalled was EasyCare, and it is not registered in Trinidad, and it is not, as far as we know, available, but it's a responsibility of the Ministry of Health to give this advisory. And it is on the Ministry of Health Instagram account. You can find the letter there as well, or some social media or their Facebook page. So it's accessible to the public. And that's a lubricant, artificial tears lubricant eye drop, right? And that was recalled, but it was not registered in Trinidad. So it was just a responsibility of the Ministry of Health to give this advisory. In addition to which, we're speaking again about bioavailability, and insulins are different, sort of a special category, because it's a sort of, we wouldn't want to say biologic, but it is not like the tablets, and you do have some changeovers. What we do recommend as pharmacists when you're switching doses is to still monitor your sugar levels, and you would monitor your dosage, and maybe the doctors which you will you know, slide your doses and increase or decrease as they see fit to bring you to the outcome that is expected. The other thing with that is that you should report back any post-marketing effects of any drug, whether it is a tablet, insulin injection, or syrup, or any antibiotic. You should have a relationship with your pharmacist and your doctor and your nurse to report what are the side effects you are experiencing, because you might think it's the side effect that was of alarm or not, but it is, every side effect is notable, because we document that for the observatory for the post-marketing surveys. Some of these side effects are known because it is this it is claimed in the it's something that they claim in their registration of their product and in their monographs, so that we know what to expect, and we can walk you through how long these side effects may persist in your situation, and it may you know, ease up after a time of use. Or you, if you are still having that side effect, we will want to withdraw you from that and try another brand or another category of drugs. So that is what professionals do together with the team, doctors, nurses, and you as a team have to give us the feedback, because we would not know. And we keep documentations of adverse events, and in particular in the public sector, they do have to file it with the Ministry of Health. And also, if in the private sector you do have that sort of effect, side effects or bad ill effects from pharmaceuticals, you do have a recourse, as Ms. Walker said, but it has to be a legitimate drug.
We're almost out of time.
The other thing I would like to, is another point I would like to emphasize to the caller. As a diabetic, you should have been eating a measured meal, and you should have been keeping records of your sugar levels. All right? So the insulin has changed, and you find you're not getting the desired effect. You have to honestly ask yourself, have you been sticking to your meal plan? And you need to be doing your fasting blood sugars, and you need to do one at least during the day and maybe one in the night, and keep record of these things, so that within a week or two, you go back to your physician and you point out, doc, I've been taking this, been using the same thing, I've been eating the same meals, my sugar is going all over. And that is the evidence the doctor will need to adjust your dose. I mean, you can't be taking, you've got the new insulin, but mango in season, and you sit and you eat a bucket of mangoes, and then you want to know, well, why my level's gone up? Or, you know, it's Christmas and you're having Christmas cake and punch a creme, and, you know, and then you say, oh God, where is the insulin? You know, the things don't go together. Mm. You have to stick to your meals and, you know, keep. Now, some of the machines do keep the readings, but not all of us are able to go back into the machine and get the readings. We may not be we may be technically challenged. Mm. All right, but nothing is wrong with a good old copybook,
pen and paper,
and a pencil.
Mm-hmm.
And you put your date and you put your numbers.
Mm.
And you track it for 2 weeks, and that is enough so that your physician will know that you're not getting the same readings before. And then, you know, you may be asked to sign a form. Don't be scared, because you're just signing to what you've said. And because it goes with it. If you're having a problem and you come and you state your problem, you bring your evidence forward, and they say to you, well, you need to sign this form, you sign the form. I mean, you read it. If you're not too sure, carry somebody with you and let the person read it, and you sign the form.
Yeah.
And then they will make adjustments. I mean, they will make the adjustments whether you sign the form or not, but to ensure that the readings go where it needs to go,
I know we are running out of time. I just wanted to make a closing statement out to the public. And I think that I want to appeal to the public, because, I mean, we have we have our duty to our fraternity to continue educating them in high ethical standards and training in our from the Pharmaceutical Society of Trinidad and Tobago. And we like to tell the public, please, as Ms. Walcott has stressed, please, you know, brands are going to be discontinued. Don't insist that you get brands because you may be opening yourself to fake drugs, right? And also, please don't go pressuring for antibiotics without a prescription. And also, know your rights to ask for what you are getting if it's from a broken package, as well as talk with your pharmacist. We are encouraging this talking with your pharmacist to educate yourself much more. We have that ongoing loyalty that is built up. It's a relationship. And we encourage the patients and the pharmacists to relate to each other. And to the pharmacist, I'm closing. Please let us remember our oath. Do no harm and make wise choices, ethical choices.
That's where we're going to have to leave it here this morning. Thank both of you again for being with us for yet another day, explaining some of these things that people really need to be mindful of. Thank you both once again for the information and the guidance as well.
You're most welcome.
It was a pleasure being here. Have a good day. Bye.
Same to you all. And that's where we drop the curtains on this interview.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.